Write down a piece of paper, the people you spend the most time with. Then look at it and score them on positivity and negativity. If they're the most positive, they're a 10. If they're negative, they're a 1, the most. And anything in between. Look at it and spend less time with the people that have low scores. You are the byproduct of the positivity and the negativity that you consume. The end. Well, I referenced it. Candor was a real challenge for me. You know, my mom is not super candorous. My dad is incredibly candorous, but he delivered it in such a negative way that I think I demonized the value of candor. I was able to 95% of the time successfully figure it out without candor, which is a very high ratio. I just got to the point in my life where the 5% didn't feel good enough anymore. You know, I just kind of like, there was a Facebook group of former employees talking negatively about me, and I was just like, this shouldn't be. I don't care about the money. I love people, like this shouldn't be. And I'm like, the only thing I do poorly is I don't give people critical feedback and it fucks it up. And I'm like, I gotta stop. And I've really worked on myself.
How were you able to do that?
By suffocating myself. By acknowledging it, right? By just, and by doing what I'm doing right now. I'm trapping myself, I'm putting it out in the open. It's why I think everybody should just post their weight on the scale every morning to the world. I mean it. It really works. It really works. Public accountability is powerful. So that's why I wrote the book.
Wow. What are some of the other ingredients that you feel could be very valuable?
Well, what's interesting about the book is that I decided to frame it, you know, when you sit down and write a book or gather your thoughts, or even like when you think about having a conversation, you're not exactly sure how you're gonna package it if it's big. A quick thing, sure. And ingredients really worked for me, because what I realized when I was talking out the book was, oh, I don't use any of these things in a silo. I need like three things at once to address this issue. So like, and sometimes it seems very in conflict. For example, patience and conviction at the same time seems weird. Or ambition and patience fucks everyone up. I push patience. How many people here consume my content? Raise your hands. Thank you. If you didn't raise your hand, you hurt my feelings. So for the people that just raised their hand, I talk about patience 24/7. A lot of people DM me, they're like, man, I don't like this patience thing, Gary. Like, what about the hustle? What about like ambition? What? I'm like, I'm the most. I'm like, do not confuse patience with complacency. Do not confuse patience with being lazy. Patience is being thoughtful. Patience is measuring twice before you cut once. Real estate has a major patience issue because people know the market moves, and so they get erratic when times are good, and sometimes even more erratic when times are bad. Patience matters. People compromise their reputation when they're scared. Patience matters. So I the book, you know, tenacity is one of the ingredients. It seems like a hard word, like a tenacity. And then like, you know, having tenacity and conviction, but then also patience and kindness and self-awareness. There's just a lot there, and ingredients worked. I'm like, you know, sweet and sour chicken is weird. It's sweet and sour. But we've all agreed that like we're good with it. And I don't think people are good with tenacity and patience. And so I thought that framework could start to frame up my argument.
How could you be good with tenacity and patience?
I do it every day. I'm incredibly, incredibly tenacious. I want to dominate everyone. Like I'm so competitive. I go to like things like this and I'm like, I'm gonna start a real estate company and put these fuckers out of business. I swear to God. And so it's really interesting. I took competition out of the book. I took competitiveness out of the book because while I was writing it, and when I write, I just talk and D-Rock films me. And I was like, I'm taking it out because I think I'm gonna write a book just on competition. I actually think one of the greatest reasons our society is struggling is because in the last 25 years, we decided to demonize competition. I think this concept of eighth place trophies has eliminated merit created entitlement and makes, like, you have 22-year-olds coming into the world and they're like confused out here. And I think that's the parents that just clapped are the ones that actually fucked it up. Self-awareness is in the book. I love that about my brother. I think I have it in spades. My sister's getting better at it. Self-awareness matters. I wish people loved themselves more. I think people, yeah, it's a big deal, man. It's okay to be bad at things. I can't read for shit. Just like legit. Have no reading comprehension. Right? I curse like a sailor. You know, like, it is what it is. Like, I'm good. Like, you can start loving everyone else only after you start with yourself. And so I think about that a lot in life, and obviously the way I think about business, it really blends. Of course you're a bad boss, you're unhappy.
Now, do you think like a lot of those ingredients are a two-way street?
Meaning?
For example, you know, you're saying a bad boss, and we know that a lot of bosses are under so much pressure because of deadlines, everything of that nature. Do you feel like at times it's not just the leader, obviously, that's got to show the way, but one of those that have to do it from a two-way street?
I don't. The leader's in control. If the employee stinks, fire her. Fire him. I think it's an excuse. Leaders work for their employees, not the other way around.
Good point.
I think bosses use that as an excuse. Well, my people stink. Fire them. Or, better yet, what about actually coaching them up? I mean, fuck, like bosses get employees and as if like they're there to serve them. It's fucking crazy. The entitlement by small business owners and managers is obnoxious. These are fellow human beings. You have people that own companies that I expect my people to work the way I work. I'm like, are you giving them the same money? The fuck are you talking about? I've never even remotely even crossed my mind in my 25 years that anyone should even remotely work as hard as me. They work for me, I work for them, but I'm getting different economics. Of course they should not work like me. The delusion, entitlement. Fucking bosses piss me off. They do. It's exactly why I don't have any. It's exactly why I don't have any. And I'm at the point in my life where I want to really show a framework to others because I know it works. And it's not a focus group of one. I watch. It's my greatest strength. Everyone's like, you predict shit. I'm like, I watch. I've never predicted a thing in my life. I've observed things earlier than others and have acted on them aggressively, quickly, and then been loud about them. But I don't predict shit, I'm not Nostradamus. And what I've observed is when a leader, when she and he really knows that they work for them, then they build real shit.
Who are some leaders out there that you feel demonstrate those qualities that could be good for the audience to study and learn from?
I don't really have the answers, I'll tell you why. I can only really co-sign somebody that I've seen in action, so I see it within my organizations, I see it in some startups, but none of them are public, right? So, but here's a good one, my friend. There's nobody out there that's confused. Who's confused about the basic civility required to be a nice person? There's nobody confused, right? Like, what show do you have to watch? What book do you need to read? This is very understood. People choose not to because of their own issues. Insecurity is the greatest poison in our society. Insecurity. It leads to such bad behavior. And some people, it's so deep that they convert it into such offense and are able to garner leverage But it's like, it's kind of like Darth Vader. It's the dark side version of motivation. And you get killed in the end.
Yeah.
And by the way, that shows up with, you made $39 million, but six people came to your funeral. Congrats.
Yeah, you don't have a legacy.
Congrats. Cool. And by the way, no judgment. You want to live that life? Mazel tov, but fuck that shit.
You know, you had mentioned that you, at the end of, I don't know what they're laughing about. Whatever, right?
Well, there's a lot of funny shit being said up here, so I think they're enjoying it.
You want to win it. How do you want your legacy to be remembered?
That I gave more than I took. The Jets thing is a fun side thing. It's been with me for so long, since I was in grade school. I'm so grateful that that happened to me. Me for myself, I invented that little dream because it's been like so fun. Like, I really wish people understood my journey to buy the Jets. It's, and I've been saying it more clearly lately so some people are starting to understand. It's just fun trying, you know? I love the pain, you know? A really nice kid asked me just backstage about, or like at the VIP thing about, I wanna be an entrepreneur, and I said, you gotta get really, really, really used to losing. You gotta get real comfortable with losing. Most people's limitation on their earning capacity is completely predicated on their stomach for losing. People are so insecure that they worry about other people's opinions about their winning and losing, that they stop in a very soft zone and they don't push themselves. I don't care what the people in the crowd are saying about what I'm doing on the field. I'm on the field. If I lose, if a division doesn't work, if a investment doesn't work out, if my companies have a bad year, I'm not super worried about what you guys think. You're eating popcorn watching me do it. Right? So that's how we should all think. Your mom is eating popcorn watching you do it. Your husband is eating popcorn watching you do it. Your kids are eating popcorn watching you do it. And then anonymous Rick in the comments is definitely eating popcorn watching you do it. So I struggle and like so want to positively shake people. I'm like, you're not doing certain thing because one person's leaving negative comments. That's insane. Do you know how sad someone's life is if they actually decide to watch your content and leave a negative comment? You shouldn't be sad for you, you should be sad for them. I'm serious, every time somebody brings hate towards me, I feel compassion. I'm like, man, thank you God. If my life was watching someone else and trying to tear them down, that is dark.
You try to reach out to them?
All the time. I DM them like, I'm sorry you're not good. Is there anything I can do for you? And they're like, oh, I'm just kidding. You're the best. And that makes me happy. That's like, that makes me even like triple down when they say that. Of course. I love compassion. I think it's a fucking hard skill. Everyone's gotten so lazy. Somebody leaves a slightly, not even critical, a slightly not what you wanted comment, and you're like, troll. Like, I'm watching. People leave like a follow-up question. People are like, hater. It's not even like negative. People are so fucking soft. Everybody's a hater, a troll. You know, of course, if they're saying abusive things, of course. But again, that person's hurting. Think about living your life and being like, you, like what? You're ugly. Like, that person's hurting. We need a new conversation. We have no compassion. Everyone's just drawing lines in the sand. We have no civility. We have politicians acting worse than the worst people in my high school acted. The fuck is going on out here? Fucking fuck. Seriously. Like, And I see it, you know, that's obviously the world. In business, it's hurting your bottom line. It is hurting your bottom line. It is hurting your bottom line.
Especially now that there's so many options.
Yeah. Like, I'm just fascinated by the confusion, but I know it's grounded in emotional issues. And like, sometimes people hit me up and they're like, all right, so what do I do about it? I'm like, well, if you can afford it, therapy's a good idea. Right? Get it out. Work on yourself. Like, fight. Fight. You have a life. This is 400 trillion to one. 400 trillion to one is the odds of being a human being. Like, literally, your mom might have just got up for another glass of wine and you wouldn't even exist. Why don't people think about that shit? The miracle of life is fucking insane to the nanosecond. And so people are just interesting. If you're in this room right now, your life is better than you think. That I promise you.
Of course, they have you on stage.
It's not that, it's, you could even be here.
Touché.
Like, you could be here, right? No, I think people lack gratitude. They just do. People are just worried about what they don't have versus realizing what they have. And I loved when everyone's like, oh, now that COVID hit 2 years ago, oh, now I'm gonna be grateful. Shit, this is really gonna wake me up. Fuck that, everyone's crying about dumb shit again. And we're not even done with this shit. People need rewiring perspective. I'll give you one that can help. A lot of times I talk like this, they're like, all right, give me something, here you go. I'll help you so much. This is real talk. Write down on a piece of paper. Old school. Fuck notes on the iPhone. Paper. Write down a piece of paper, the people you spend the most time with. Then look at it and score them on positivity and negativity. If they're the most positive, they're a 10. If they're negative, they're a 1, the most. And anything in between. Look at it and spend less time with the people that have low scores. I'm not saying cut your mama out. I'm saying limit it a little bit. If your mother is the most negative person in your life, don't talk to her 6 times a day. Talk to her once every 2 days. That's just the way life is. You are the byproduct of the positivity and the negativity that you consume. The end. It's real, it's super real. It's like the exercise thing. It's not comfortable to like limit your interaction with your older brother or your best friend, but that is the answer of the road towards more good stuff. More positive people in your life, more negative people in your life. You're in control. All the best things, people are like, Gary, that's hard. I'm like, the good shit is hard. The good shit is hard.
What are you the most optimistic about, I guess now, would you say, in the next year or 2 years that you're seeing out there?
People. I'm the most optimistic about humans. I think the most ridiculous branding in the world right now is how underestimated human beings are. I mean that. I think humans are underrated. I think a lot of people try to push that we aren't, but I think we're pretty fucking remarkable. People are resilient. People, there's so much good going on right now, you don't even know. So I'm most optimistic about people. As far as if you're going more granular, which is I think where you might have been going, I'm incredibly excited about the consumer blockchain. Yeah. I think people are completely missing the boat on what NFTs actually represent. I think people don't realize that they're deploying in their internet perspective on the blockchain. All the jokes of like, well, I can just right click and save the NFT. I love, it makes me laugh because I'm watching a lot of my 20, 30, and 40 year old friends become their parents.
How so?
Well, they're like, NFTs are scams, this is it. It's the same shit that your folks told you about the internet. Get off that computer, it's stupid. That became your career. I'm not getting an iPhone. This BlackBerry, I need the buttons, I gotta touch that shit. People always say no to the new. And that's where the opportunity is. And so I'm incredibly optimistic and opportunistic and focused on the consumer blockchain because it will change the world. And if you're in the title business, you better be real scared because the blockchain's coming after you.
How so?
It eliminates the need for you. Oh, wow. It's a ledger with decentralized servers needing nobody, owned by nobody. Boom.
There's a few of them in the crowd.
It's real. And my big thing is like, that's not bad. That's the opportunity. Technology doesn't give a fuck about our feelings. You think technology cared about Blockbuster? You think Blockbuster cared about movie theaters? I love when people cry about some new shit after they were the ones that killed the last shit. I love when people get into like a certain part of their career where they want to slow it down, but then they're mad at the youngsters who are hungry. You like that one? It's true, right? They're like, this is some bullshit. I'm like, you did that 30 years ago. I love when the old lion dies to the new one. I can't wait till people crush me. That's the game. That's why I have so much disrespect for old entrepreneurs that try to pay politicians to change the rules. They're fake entrepreneurs. You're an old dog. It's time for you to get killed. You will not see me in my 70s and 80s use all my power and money to try to change the rules. I will be honorable and ready for the next ninja to kill me. People make decisions based on their best interests in the short term. I'm sorry you don't want to do the 60 hours of homework required to understand what the blockchain is, but I'm not going to cry for you when you get destroyed. Merit. That's my favorite thing. So I've never thought of it as waste. I always thought of it as an opportunity for me to deploy my happiness on another person that was clearly in a very tough spot. At this point in my life, I can't respond to the majority of it because the numbers are just outpacing the actual hours in a day. But I get a lot of enjoyment of interacting with people that are very mean to me because I always dream that showing that level of compassion and kindness back to them might be the seed that shows them that there is goodness and it's possible and might be the beginning of them getting out of that place. Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, but I don't think I kill them with kindness. I think of it more as I motivate them with empathy. I'm not worried about anybody loving or hating me. So I'm not killing them with kindness for me. I'm trying to show an act of kindness with the hope that it might trigger an opportunity for them to build.
Perfect, thank you.
I think there's something very important in that combo. Let me explain what's very important. One of the great things of being good with negativity is you're also then good with positivity. I get way more love than I get hate. And it's actually very dangerous to believe it. When everyone is telling you you're the greatest of all time, there's something very scary that can happen in that. You could lose your humility.
Yeah.
One of the great things about not hearing either is you just stay in your spot. You know, one of the reasons I like about the fact that I put both fingers in my ear and I just go is really not about being able to deal with hate. It's actually being able to control the love so that it keeps me in a humble place instead of getting high on my own supply.
That being said, though, most
emotional intelligence, patience. Would you mind sharing the last time you kind of lost your cool?
Oh, I can losing my cool is like fun.
That wasn't the response I was expecting.
You know, I mean, look, one of the reasons I can really associate with other human beings is because of the Jets. And I'm being dead serious right now. This is very real. I am so zen the fuck out, even on my high, like it's really funny because I'm such a high energy character. It's like, it takes, you have to like actually really know me to be like, oh, what the fuck is going on? Like he's just like, right? And that's why I could do so much and that's why so much is going on. But in football land, I'm actually the reverse. I'm completely irrational. I'm completely emotional. I'm incredibly unhappy. Well, I love the Jets because I love the climb and the process. But the reason I can understand how people act is probably because of my state, because it's real. It's not like I'm manufacturing it. I prefer not to. But I'm genuinely unhappy, and I'm incredibly envious. I fucking hate Buffalo right now. The whole city. Like, fuck Buffalo.
They
fuck
lost,
you,
don't worry.
Buffalo. And the fucking happiness I had when they lost that game to the Chiefs. Like, just joy. Which is similar to when somebody is unhappy and they tear you down, and when they see you misstep, they're happy. I'm that as a football fan, but that's fake life, that's sports. People live that real life. They want you to misstep. Jealousy, envy, it's devastating. It's such a bad place. I mean, I hate Boston. All of them. Like every person that lives there. And so when I see the blue-red shit, I understand it. I'm like, oh no. People do what I do in fake sports life in real life. And that's why I'm like, fuck, I gotta figure this out, because it's bad, because I'm bad in football. Like, I wanna fight. You know how some people in high school and college drank a lot and would fight and we'd call that beer muscles? I have sports muscles.
Jets muscles?
Yeah, I go to like Pittsburgh, I wanna fight people. So I know what losing cool looks like. In business, it's incredibly, incredibly rare. If it happens, what I'm very good at is the second before it happens, I go off the grid so nobody feels it. It's been a couple times, I believe as the ultimate leader of my organization that me deploying fear or concern or unhappiness is something that is just not gonna be beneficial. And I try to, and I think what I tend to do when I lose my cool is go into a hair of like condescending Raz, right? So like I let my crew know when I'm upset with a little zing, instead of like a explosion. And when I notice myself building up zing, I try to find a way to dump it.
Hey Gary.
Yes, sir.
I happen to be a baby boomer, 58 probably, but, and my son, my 20, 30 year old liberal millennial son's come to work for me.
Yes.
Of course we're—
Those fuckers.
Believe me. I'm red.
You got a mic.
Okay.
You're red, he's blue, go ahead.
I'm red, he's blue.
Yep.
And my wife says to me, how in the F is that gonna work with him going to work? Thank you, Christine Beckwith. Anyway, the tough thing you brought up is working with those generation being different. And because I'm old school, I mean, it's like, get in there, get the shit done.
Yep.
No excuses. I worked for a guy like that for 11 and a half years. My ass is all scar tissue today. And, you know, the change that we have to make to work with people like that. So what you brought up about working with the millennials, that's the thing some days I struggle with the most, because I have to bite my frickin' tongue or not say anything, or my two guys that work in my office will shut my door and say, don't bother him for a while, but just trying to adapt to that. And my kid's got, I mean, he's doing well, but it's just, sometimes you're like, it's just tough to understand the differences some days.
Well, that's the way it's supposed to be. Like, did you, keep the mic, because this is powerful. Did you agree with what your parents thought?
Hell no.
Okay. Well, fuck.
What do you expect, George?
Right? It's the way it's supposed to be. And by the way, let the results speak. My dad didn't agree with anything I brought to the table.
Well, what I did to him, I walked out of the office to get on a plane. I dropped 8 files in his lap. I said, get this shit done. Don't fuck it up. I'll see you on Monday. Surprise and delight me.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not so sold that that's like the format that's going to win.
Well, I was laughing when I did that. But when I called him today, he's like, I'm on deal 5 right now. And it was like,
listen, you know this. There's such a different dynamic between father and son, father and daughter, you know, mom and son, mom and daughter. Like, that has a whole different dynamic than just being a boss to a different generation.
Oh my God, yes.
I'm a big fan that when you're the leader, you should quote unquote know better. When I ask you a question of, did you agree with everything your parents? And you say, hell no. Like, then you should have the wisdom to have empathy towards your son not seeing it the same way. On the flip side, what I love about it is too many leaders and parents get too involved, but what they should do is get super uninvolved, don't micromanage, and let the results speak.
And that's what I find that I pull back.
When you pull back and let the results speak, if he goes and crushes and the math is there, well then guess what? And if he doesn't, then you get to deploy some fun words.
Oh yeah, we have fun words.
But where leaders mess up is they get involved enough where that person then can blame you. When my team sees it different than me, I am always in the calling their bluff business. I'm like, show me. I step away, and by the way, it gives me tremendous joy when they crush and it works.
And I do have a sign up in my office that says, do shit you love.
Well then, you should then live that saying and let them do it, right? Because I get tremendous joy when my team does something differently than me that I wanted and it wins. Now, I get more joy when they fail and I'm like, see? No, I'm kidding. I think leadership is purple. You gotta know when to take a step back. And by the way, I've got a great career where, I'm just gonna call it like it is. Here's where I'm strong, similar to the gentleman's mortgage question. I don't know if you noticed that it's a very important subtlety to my game that people never talk about, and I'm fascinated by it. I didn't really answer his question because I didn't know. I don't talk about shit I don't know. How that manifests is when I'm talking, I'm like, on it. So in my career, most of the shit when I talked, I may stay passive and be out and was wrong or right, but when I'm talking, I'm often right, which means often. I mean it. I stay out of the shit I don't know, but I'm in my shit. And so what often happens is when I am talking it, it turns out to be the way I said. There's something very powerful, and I think you can use this. It's a double win. What too many people do when they think they're right is they try to force that person to do it their way. The move is to completely let go and let them go, because when you're right, you're building equity that you know. I love when my team goes 0-for-6. When they do 6 things in a row, and they saw that if they'd listened or followed the guidance or took the mentorship, it would have worked out better, by the 7th time, they're blindly bought in. But too many leaders mucks it up so they can blame you. Like, if you didn't get involved, because they don't want the accountability. So what you need to do is create a complete framework of freedom so they can be fully accountable, and then you can just say, what? And then when they come with that bullshit excuse, you're like, fuck that. Thank you.
Gary, what are your final thoughts?
Something. My final thoughts are be nice. Be fucking nice. And on that note, if you're like really self-aware and be like, fuck, I'm really not there, it's because you're not in a great place yet. And you can be. So be nice to yourself first. It's okay if you suck at shit or if you're not fully there. Good news. That's because of the way you grew up. Environment, parenting, DNA. Don't be hard on yourself. Just take a step back, take a deep breath, and start trying to chip away at it. One fucking interaction, one conversation at a time. You could be so fucked up for 42 years and still live the best life ever. It just started at, it's true. It just starts at 43. You can do this. You can absolutely do this, but it takes the work. And if you have the financial means, therapy is real. Get the poison out. Go to a stranger and tell them why your dad was the biggest piece of shit of all time. Get that shit out. I love you. See ya.
Thank you.